The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, conversing with him. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make three tents here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud cast a shadow over them. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell prostrate and were very much afraid. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Rise and do not be afraid." And when the disciples raised their eyes, they saw no one else but Jesus alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus charged them, "Do not tell the vision to anyone until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus
Christ. So mountains are in Bible stories from start to finish. The place where Jesus was born in Bethlehem, the house of Elizabeth, the city of Nazareth, they're all on hilltops, maybe not mountains like the Rocky Mountains, but very high places in the Holy Land. Remember Jesus' Sermon on the Mount and Mount Tabor today, where Jesus is transfigured. The city of Jerusalem is built on the cluster of mountaintops called the Mount of Olives, Mount Zion, and the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount was the place where Abraham went to sacrifice his only begotten miracle son. It was the place where the temple was built, and where God the Father accepted the willing sacrifice of his own only begotten Son on the cross. This is the holiest place for Judaism as well as Islam, and on all sides are the places where Jesus came to the temple, he presided at the Last Supper, he prayed in the Garden of Olives, he was condemned to death, he was crucified, and rose from the dead. Well, since I'm from Kansas, I consider mountains pretty amazing. There is a trade-off, however, because here on the East Coast, we don't have much of an opportunity to see the broad sky as you might see in Kansas or in Texas. Some people would say that high places are holy places because they're closer to God, but I don't really believe that heaven is up or earth is down. I don't know if it's really a somewhere at all. But I consider that mountains are places of growth. The higher you go, the farther you can see. The horizon, which was previously unseen, suddenly stretches out for miles. On high places, if it is a clear day, you learn because you see. On a clear day, standing on Mount Nebo on the east bank of the Jordan River, where Moses looked out over the Holy Land for the last time, without being allowed to cross the river, I have seen Jerusalem far on the horizon, almost 4,000 feet above sea level, a mile above the Dead Sea, which is off down to the left. Moses could see the mountains of Jerusalem, the city of Jericho, the Sea of Galilee, and Mount Tabor, even all the way to the other side of Israel on the shore of the Mediterranean, where on Mount Carmel, Elijah's cave is still today. All of it opens up before you because you can see. It is important to acknowledge that all of this took place. God chose his life with us, and he chose landmarks that would endure for ages. That's why they're all mountains, because they're not going away. He established the covenant of Abraham's faithfulness on the mountain where the Lord asked Abraham to sacrifice his son and show his devotion. The law came to Moses in his mysterious visits with the Lord on Mount Sinai after the people were delivered from slavery in Egypt. So today we come to the moment now when Jesus takes Peter, James, and John up Mount Tabor. The arid desert is below. That's where we live. It is familiar to us in these uncertain times in which we find ourselves. We feel the temptation to lock ourselves in sadness and discouragement sometimes, to give up and say, "What's the point?" All you have to do is begin to climb. When we go on pilgrimage to the Holy Land, we go to Mount Tabor. Imagine a mountain that suddenly just rises out of the valley, like a bump. Across the valley to the northwest, you can see Nazareth. Across the valley to the northeast, you can see the Sea of Galilee. The tour bus circles up and up and up the mountain. Imagine yourself going up that circular road that climbs the mountain. You make several laps around the sides of the mountain, then you switch back and forth another half dozen times. Each time you come back around to the side where you started, you are startled by what you can now see, what you could not see before. Higher up, it's so beautiful. A few more times around the mountain, and you come back to the same side and can't imagine it could get any more beautiful. I think this is what the spiritual life is like. Each year, as we come back around to Lent and Easter, to the Lent and Easter side of the mountain, hopefully we've gone higher and can see a wider horizon than last year. You go up more, and it is even more beautiful than before. So they get to the top of the mountain, and their vision is filled with something entirely unexpected and new. Imagine if you had never seen the horizon, having lived all your life in the valley. Suddenly you are on top of the mountain, and you see the horizon stretching in all directions. It would be a lot to take in for the first time. Then suddenly, the glory of God is revealed. Moses is still up there, and Elijah with Jesus. They're having a conversation. Jesus' apostles were suddenly placed in a new context. There is some confusion in Peter's words as he tries to process all of this. "I know," he thinks, "we can have all this new insight and simply add it to all that we've always had. We can still be the same people we've always been. Things don't have to be any different than we've always thought they were, do they? So we'll put each of you in your own little tent and deal with all of this one at a time, and we'll keep you all together. The law and the prophets, and now Jesus too." But God's voice cuts in with a finality that is the fulfillment of all the scriptures that have come before. Moses and Elijah vanish, and the voice of the Father says, "This is my beloved Son, listen to him." "This is my beloved Son," familiar words you might remember from being present at his baptism in the Jordan River, which happened a little bit over there to the east. You can see the place from Mount Tabor. The glory we behold is not a question of pitching tents, trying to freeze life in this moment of light and not move forward. Rather, it's a question of letting ourselves be covered by the shadow of the cloud and know that light endures whatever comes. Moments of light are given to us in our lives to set us on our way and give us encouragement. Transfiguration is not something that we observe like spectators. We realize that we must change because the light is also within us. Peter, James, and John look around and only see Jesus alone with them. But now they know this presence changes everything. The horizon we have glimpsed in the light will continue to attract us, even when we so often feel that we are in darkness or struggling with daily trials and doubts. Moving forward, we carry with us the exhilaration and joy and the renewed hope that we find in Jesus.